bodies keep piling up in India, where a record COVID-19 surge continues. And it's almost the same situation in Brazil, which now has more than 400,000 COVID-19 deaths. The Philippines health chief expects the country to reach herd immunity by the early part of next year. We'll dig deeper into the Philippines' vaccination figures with the head of ABS-CBN's data analytics team, Edson Guido. And dozens are dead following a stampede at a religious festival in Israel. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. More COVID-19 patients dying in India. The country's healthcare system crumbling under the weight of another record surge in infections. We have more in this report.
Just hours ago, Monica Gol's mother died of COVID-19. Now she is sat by her husband's side in a New Delhi hospital, where he is in a critical condition with the virus. 39-year-old Amit is wedged between three other patients in a hospital casualty ward, one of many in India, the world's second most populous nation, that is totally overwhelmed with patients. Gol, a software engineer, says she managed to find an oxygen cylinder for her husband. But doctors say he needs a ventilator, and none can be found.
He was admitted last night. We got him at 9 o'clock. My mom expired in the morning today because of lack of ventilator. There was no ventilator, otherwise she couldn't survive. Now again, he needs ventilator support. Doctor says we have 2 days. I have tried, I don't know, thousands of numbers across India. Nobody is helping.
Thousands of Indians have been frantically searching for beds and life-saving oxygen for their sick relatives, even seeking help from social media apps and personal contacts. Hospital beds that do become available, especially in intensive care units, are snapped up in minutes. The situation is dire. The head of ICU at Holy Family Hospital, Dr. Sumit Ray, told Reuters some patients are dying on their way to hospital because they're going from hospital to hospital trying to find a bed.
It is very bad. It's beyond bad, actually. It's not a crisis, it's a devastatingly bad situation. That's how I can describe it. It's reached a point where crisis is a very mild word for it. At this point of time, we are beyond our capacity in the ICU, as you can see. We have put in beds and stretchers between beds. We have run out of ventilators. We are using anesthesia machines to ventilate patients. We have patients on the wards who are very sick, who ideally should be in an ICU, but we have no space for them.
India's total COVID-19 cases surpassed 18 million on Thursday, and the country has repeatedly broken records recently for the number of fatalities in a single day there. Gravediggers are working around the clock to bury victims. Hundreds have been cremated in makeshift pyres in parks and parking lots. Meanwhile, Gol continues to feel helpless and is worried about what she will tell her 8-year-old son if she has to return home without his father.
More pandemic problems for India as its inoculation program gets plagued with a shortage in vaccines. New Delhi's health minister says the government has requested shots from companies in preparation for the vaccination of all adults over 18 this weekend. But at least three regions have yet to receive any.
We were preparing for the vaccination campaign and we started mega campaigns also. We trained thousands of healthcare workers and doctors, etc., to start this mega vaccination campaign. But there is no vaccine with us.
People over 45 are currently eligible to be inoculated in India. They can be seen waiting for hours outside vaccination centers to receive their dose. On Thursday, India reported more than 3,600 coronavirus fatalities. That's the highest daily death toll since the start of the pandemic. But medical experts believe the country's true COVID-19 numbers may be 5 to 10 times greater than the official tally. Brazil, now the second country to record over 400,000 coronavirus deaths after the U.S. On Thursday, the health ministry confirmed more than 3,000 new fatalities. At least two experts expect daily deaths to average above 2,000 due to slow vaccinations and loosening of social restrictions. A brutal surge in infections this year has pushed local hospitals to the brink of their capacities, leading to 100,000 deaths in just over a month, driven by the coronavirus variant first detected in Brazil that's believed to be over two times more contagious than the original virus. Another grave pandemic milestone, global COVID-19 cases reached the 150 million mark, according to the latest tally from Johns Hopkins University. More than 3.1 million people have also died due to the disease. 87.2 million have recovered. The U.S. still has the most number of infections at more than 32 million. It's followed by India with over 18.3 million cases. Here in the Philippines, the total number of COVID-19 cases stand at over 1,028,000. That's after 8,276 new infections were recorded on Thursday. Active cases stand close to 70,000. 114 more patients died of COVID-19, pushing the death toll to 17,145. The DOH also reported 6,000 new recoveries. The Philippine government allows more businesses to reopen in areas under Modified Enhanced Community Quarantine, or MECQ. That's in a bid to boost the pandemic-hit economy. Dine-in services now allowed in restaurants at 10% capacity. Barbershops, salons, and other personal care establishments can also reopen at 30% capacity. The Philippine government calls on the establishments to strictly observe COVID-19 protocols. The new business guidelines will take effect on May 1st. Metro Manila, Bulacan, Rizal, Laguna, and Cavite remain under MECQ until May 14th. The Philippines' health chief warning of an India-like surge in COVID-19 cases in the country. Health Secretary Francisco Duque III says this could happen if the public fails to comply with minimum health standards. He notes the country's rate of new COVID-19 infections is on the downtrend, but whether that decline will be sustained has yet to be seen.
If we do not intensify our COVID pandemic response, no, like what has happened in India and also in some other countries where the second or third waves are being experienced, no, that's a big possibility. And this is a lesson we all have to learn from what's happening in other countries.
As for the country's inoculation program, Duque admits the pace is slow. Only around 3% of the population have been vaccinated, when 500,000 shots should be administered daily. Duque says the Philippines might reach herd immunity by the first quarter of 2022 under a worst-case scenario.
New healthcare workers, they need to be protected fully. So we have 1.7 million of them. How many vaccines or doses do we need? 3.4 million doses for them to give them complete protection. Senior citizens, they're the ones who are the most vulnerable. Sila po yung mga namamatay dahil sa matinding komplikasyon ng COVID. How many are they? They're 9 million. You need 18 million doses. Okay? So 18 million plus 3.4 million. So ilan po yun? That's about 21.4 million.
Layo pa.
At layo pa yan.
This week, 1 million Sinovac doses arrived in the country. 2 million more will arrive next month. But with a target population of 70 million Filipinos, these deliveries are just a drop in the bucket. Let's go beyond the numbers now as we take a closer look at the country's vaccination rollout. Joining us, Edson Guido. He's the head of the ABS-CBN Data Analytics team. Edson, nice to see you again, and thanks for joining us today.
It's good to see you, Ms. Carmina, and thanks again for inviting me.
All right. Now, you were spot on in your projection that we were going to hit 1 million cases by the end of the month. We're going to talk more about that later. But first off, the vaccination rollout. Here's where we're at, according to government data. We heard a bit of it from Secretary Duque just a few minutes ago, but here's where we're at. They've administered 1.8 million doses. They're saying 88% have received their first dose. They're also saying 14% have been fully vaccinated. 14%? Do you believe that, Edson? What's wrong with these numbers?
Actually, you're right, no, Ms. Carmina. The latest government data showed that the Philippines has fully vaccinated 247,000 people. But the infographic that was released to the public, there's a 14% beside this number. And if we look closely, the denominator is actually the latest total allocation of 1.78 million. And when we talk about vaccine rollout, in my opinion, the relevant denominator should ideally be relative to the population. So if we say 247,000 people are fully vaccinated, then that's just equivalent to 0.22% of the 110 million Filipinos. So in short, it's just a fifth of 1%. And secondly, in terms of totals, the Philippines has now administered 1.8 million doses. The Bloomberg data that the government often cites shows that the Philippines is fifth in Southeast Asia. But if we look at the total doses as a percentage of the population, Singapore is number one in Southeast Asia with 2.2 million doses out of their 5.9 million population. So that's around 37%. The Philippines is just at 1.7% of the population, which is actually second to the last in Southeast Asia ahead of only Vietnam. But what's the case count of Vietnam? Vietnam has less than 3,000 total cases out of 97 million people. And this is why I would argue that we can't just rank countries by total doses, because for instance, Singapore, they have a population of less than 6 million. So if Singapore gets to a point where it has vaccinated everyone, assuming 6 million people, and say the Philippines reaches 7 million, are we going to say that the Philippines should now be ranked higher, even when 7 million is just 10% of our 70 million target, while Singapore at say 6 million has already inoculated everyone? It doesn't make sense, no?
So really the key here is to look at the population.
Yes. And this is just my opinion. Whenever we look at vaccine stats, there are two important things that we all want to know. One is the percentage of the population that is vaccinated. And second, how long it will take for us to reach our targets given the daily rate of vaccination. I don't see these things in the infographic.
Okay, let's talk about that now, Edson. Government is hoping to speed up the vaccination rollout with the arrival of more vaccines. But based on the numbers that we're seeing, how are we faring in real time, though, in terms of daily inoculations?
Well, the latest seven-day average of vaccinations is 35,320 per day. This is actually lower compared to the 43,800 the week before and 47,500 2 weeks ago. So our vaccination pace has actually slowed down. And the government target is 70 million people. And as we know, most vaccines require two doses. So 70 million people is equivalent to 140 million doses. And we have already administered 1.8 million. So the remaining target is around 138.2 million. And if we divide that by our average of 35,000, it will take 10.7 years for the Philippines to reach 140 million doses. And Ms. Carmina, 10.7 years from now is January 2032. So that gives us an idea of just how slow the 35,000 daily average is.
Let me just backtrack a bit here. With the rate things are going, for us to be able to reach the target of 70 million, that's times two of when you talk about doses, that's going to be year 2032, Edson. But we just heard from Secretary Duque, herd immunity by first quarter of 2022. Is that doable based on the numbers that you're seeing right now?
Well, the government target is 140 million doses by the end of the year, but they're now looking at the first quarter of 2022. Again, with our current numbers, as of April 27, we still need 138.2 million doses, and we have 8 months if the target is the end of the year. So if that's 248 days, if we divide the 138.2 million doses by 248 days, ideally, right now, we should be inoculating 557,000 per day. At our current pace of 35,000, we're not even at 10% of the ideal rate. And this daily figure required to reach 70 million by December 31 will just continue to go up to, say, 600,000 per day if we continue to lag behind this daily average. And for me, I understand that we're still facing supply issues and the government is expecting an increase in the rollout by the second half of the year. But as it is right now, we only have 4 million doses. So that translates to 2 million Filipinos. which is less than 3% of the 70 million target. So if we want to reach this target, we really need more vaccines. And we have to ramp up our rollout because at the rate we're going, 35,000 in a day, it's really slow.
That's very, very far from the 550,000 per day,
yeah,
as you said, that we should be hitting if we want to hit the target of herd immunity by first quarter of 2022. Now, let's talk about April, the month of April, Edson. We hit a million this month. As we look back, it was a steady climb until the COVID hit the gas pedal. Tell us about what happened in April.
Yeah, so just to give our viewers a recap, DOH reported the first case of local transmission in March last year. And on March 9, 2021, total cases breached 600,000. So it took more than a year to reach 600,000. But in April, the pace of the increase was really fast. On March 26, the Philippines surpassed 700,000 total cases. And exactly 1 month after, on April 26, which is last Monday, the country hit 1 million total cases. So in short, more than 300,000 were reported in just 1 month. And actually, in recent weeks, it only took around 10 days for every 100,000 additional cases. And here's my final point. DOH has reported more cases in April alone compared to the total of October 2020 to February 2021. So that's a 5 month span. And yet, the monthly total of April has already exceeded that. So it's very clear that the month of April was really the worst in the country's fight to contain this virus.
Also, if I may add to that, Edson, there were a lot of laboratories that also didn't report.
Yes.
In the month of April. So is it safe to assume that the numbers that we're seeing right now can be actually worse in reality?
Yes, definitely. You're right, Ms. Carmina. Just the other day, 22 laboratories were not able to submit data. So that's really a significant number of labs. And for sure, that will have significant implications as well in terms of showing the actual numbers on the ground.
Let's go to the deaths now. April 2021, you called it the worst, but it's really the deadliest month yet in this country's war with COVID. We're hoping that it's the deadliest period,
yeah,
that we won't have to see anything far worse than what we're seeing right now. But what are the numbers telling you in terms of the deaths, Edson?
Well, we ended March with 13,300 deaths, but the death toll now is at 17,100. So that shows that nearly 4,000 deaths were reported just this April, and around 130 deaths were reported daily this month, including the 401 deaths reported in a single day. So that's the record high for the Philippines. And actually, when I dove deeper, I saw that these are not just backlogs from 2020 or even from months ago. These are recent deaths. And because of this, actual deaths in April have already surpassed the peak that we saw in 2020. So right now, the trend is really clear. Whenever there's a spike in cases, unfortunately, a proportion of those cases will eventually result in deaths.
Mm. And these deaths happen because of many factors, but would you say that the deaths could also be avoided if there is a healthy healthcare system, if it's not burdened by this disease?
Yes, for sure. Because in April, if we remember, it also coincided with hospitals reporting full capacity. So I guess if your hospital system is overwhelmed, then they can't efficiently treat the patients as well. So that could also be a factor why we're seeing an increase in the number of deaths in April.
Because I asked you that question because to some it may be pretty obvious. But then again, there's also, you know, some cases wherein there are a lot of active cases, but not so many deaths because the healthcare system is thriving and it's sophisticated enough to deal with a surge. But in the case like the Philippines, where you have a not so sophisticated healthcare system compared to other countries, that they can actually take in this avalanche of cases, that ultimately is the result. More cases mean more deaths.
Yes.
But then you have, let's talk about the daily average of new cases. When you look at it, Edson, in the graph that you made for us, it's lower than the peak. Would you now call this a trend? What are your findings?
Yes, Carmina, we're definitely seeing an improvement with less than 10,000 cases reported for 11 straight days now. And you're right, the daily average is just 8,260, no? It's lower compared to the recent peak of 11,000 daily. So yes, we're seeing lower numbers, but we have to remember that these figures remain high at more than 8,000. And more importantly, the trend is not irreversible. Remember when we saw the surge in March, cases were just at 2,000 to 3,000. Now the base is higher at more than 8,000. So this is definitely not yet the time to be complacent, because whenever a new surge, if it happens and we're coming off this really high base of more than 8,000, it will be even worse, like what Secretary Duque said earlier when he was comparing our situation possibly to India. In fact, our 7-day average of more than 8,200 cases is still the highest in Southeast Asia. And this is why it's good that the government decided to extend the MECQ for now, because we're still we're seeing an improvement, yes, but again, the cases are still high at more than 8,000 daily.
We have to see that base really at its lowest.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a problem right there. How low do you think it should go before, you know, we start to really ease? What are the numbers telling you if you compare it to last year? I'm talking about the experience this year, I'd say.
Ideally, when we were at GCQ, before we shifted to ECQ, we were in February, we were reporting around 2,000 cases daily. So ideally, we have to reach that mark first. And even last year at our lowest point, we were still reporting thousands daily. We were never really able to reach the level where we're reporting just hundreds consistently. So the goal right now is to reach that level first when we were still at GCQ, that's around 2,000, before we start to possibly think of reopening the economy.
Okay, the positivity rate. Let's talk about now. That appears to be lower, but it's still high. When you have this kind of positivity rate, what does that tell you?
Yes, that's correct. The positivity rate is less than 20% for 15 straight days now. However, the average, Ms. Carmina, is still at 17.5% in the same period. It's still 3 to 4 times higher than the World Health Organization benchmark of 5% or lower for at least 2 weeks. So this figure basically tells us that we need to test even more, because local transmission is still happening on the ground. However, we're actually seeing the opposite recently when it comes to testing. We peaked at 67,000 2 weeks ago, but after that, testing has yet to exceed 60,000 in almost 2 weeks. So actually, it's good that DOH has mentioned the lower number of tests after reporting lower number of cases last Tuesday and Wednesday. And for me, we really need to expand our testing, because the MECQ will not be maximized if we don't improve in the other aspects of our pandemic response, especially testing and contact tracing. We know that whenever we impose lockdowns, it's not really a long-term solution, but it just merely helps us buy time so we can eventually scale up our infrastructure whenever we decide to reopen the economy.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. The head of ABS-CBN's data analytics team, Edson Guido, there, taking us beyond the numbers. Thanks, Edson. Keep safe. Take care.
It's always a pleasure to join you on your show, Ms. Carmina, and keep safe.
Thank you. See you soon. Moving on with the rest of the news now. Health Chief Francisco Duque III wants the Food and Drug Administration to look into the free distribution of the drug ivermectin by two House lawmakers. On Thursday, House Deputy Speaker Rodante Marcoleta and Anak Kalusugan Party List Representative Mike Defensor distributed the anti-parasitic drug in Quezon City. That's despite warnings from medical experts. There is still no sufficient data on its efficacy against COVID-19. The lawmakers were assisted by doctors who signed a prescription for ivermectin, but some of the prescriptions did not indicate important details.
I also received reports. Nilagay lang daw yung pangalan, pero walang PTR number, hindi malinaw, wala yung address ng doktor. So this will have to be looked into by the field investigating agents of FDA. Oh, of course, I am alarmed and concerned if that is indeed verified to be true. Yung doktor na andon na nag-prescribe would be held accountable in accordance with our statutes, no?
Yes.
Laws, kailangan sundin ito. Hindi pwedeng token na prescription lang.
The Philippine Society for Microbiology and Infectious Diseases calls for more research to prove the effectiveness of ivermectin against COVID-19. The president of the group Cebu chapter, Dr. Fiji Tambaco, says existing trials on the drug are tainted with biases.
Then yung paggawa nila ng trial may mga kulang kumbaga. Mm-hmm. So it has to be addressed by another well-designed and well-conducted trial. So we don't just listen to anecdotal studies.
Meanwhile, at least one doctor is touting the safety of another drug being used to treat COVID-19. Dr. Randy Nicolas of the Philippine General Hospital says the HIV drug Liranlimab works by stopping the deadly immune phase of an infection. That drug was used to treat former President Joseph Estrada when he contracted the coronavirus.
The drug peaks in your bloodstream at approximately 35 to 52 hours after administration. And right at the peak, when we noticed that they were peaking, the condition of former President Estrada dramatically improved.
The Philippine province of Ifugao has now been placed under modified enhanced community quarantine. That's according to presidential spokesperson Harry Roque. Ifugao joins a list of other areas which were placed under MECQ until May 14th, which include the National Capital Region, Bulacan, Cavite, Laguna, Rizal, the province of Abra, and the city of Santiago in Quirino. Meanwhile, Princesa City in Palawan has, Puerto Princesa City in Palawan has been placed under general community quarantine.
Ito po ay matapos mag-apila yung probinsya ng Ifugao at yung siyudad ng Puerto Princesa.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, a stampede during a religious event leaves dozens dead in Israel. We'll be back with more on that. Stay with us here on ANC. And we are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Bodies keep piling up in India, where a record COVID-19 surge continues. It's almost the same situation in Brazil, which now has more than 400,000 COVID-19 deaths. The Philippines' health chief expects the country to reach herd immunity by the early part of next year in a worst-case scenario. The data analyst, however, points out the country needs to inoculate more than 500,000 people a day to reach its 70 million target by the end of the year. And dozens are dead following a stampede at a religious festival in Israel. Back with more news. Dozens of people died in a stampede at a religious festival in Israel Friday. Tens of thousands had gone to the tomb of a rabbi for all-night prayers, songs, and dance, defying COVID-19 warnings from health officials. Witnesses said people were crushed to suffocated in a passageway in what Israel's prime minister described as a heavy disaster. There are at least 40 fatalities, among them children. About 100 others are injured. Police shut down the site as rescuers worked to extricate the casualties. Military helicopters brought some of those who were hurt to hospitals. Bars and clubs in Hong Kong welcomed staff and patrons back on Thursday, but only those who received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. Their customers and staff alike have to present either a printed vaccination certificate or a QR code on a government-issued app. Hong Kong offers all adult residents a choice between the vaccines from Pfizer or Sinovac, provided for free at public health centers. However, only 6% of the adult population has been fully vaccinated so far.
I hope we can see more people choosing to get vaccinated in Hong Kong because the vaccines we have are great, highly effective, particularly against severe disease. And so in other countries, there's not enough vaccines. In other countries, people are queuing up to get vaccinated and still waiting. In Hong Kong, we don't need to wait. Anybody can just go online, book an appointment at a vaccine center now, and they can get vaccinated tomorrow.
Hong Kong has kept its COVID-19 transmission largely under control, recording only about 11,700 coronavirus cases. In the U.S., the mayor of New York announces the city will fully reopen beginning July 1st. Here are the details.
We are ready to bring New York City back fully on July 1st.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio on Thursday said life in the Big Apple would finally get back to normal this summer after more than a year of coronavirus-related closures.
All systems go because you've earned it.
De Blasio said the biggest reason for reopening the most populous city in the U.S. was the success of its vaccination efforts. 6.3 million coronavirus vaccines have been administered in a city with over 8 million residents.
And we now can set this goal because we've been moving forward constantly, more and more vaccinations, fewer and fewer infections, thank God.
Today, Manhattan's Jacob Javits Convention Center is vaccinating thousands of New Yorkers a day. But last year, it was a field hospital. The pandemic was particularly harrowing for New York, once the epicenter of the outbreak. This time last year, hospitals were overwhelmed.
Ventilators, ventilators, ventilators.
The state governor was pleading for supplies. The city parked refrigerated trucks on a Brooklyn pier to store the bodies of victims. A Reuters aerial drone captured mass graves dug on Hart Island in the Bronx. A government website puts New York City's death toll at 32,000. De Blasio on Thursday prefaced his reopening announcement as the light at the end of the tunnel.
We can do this July 1st. We all got a little bit of work to do, but we can get there together.
He said restaurants, bars, theaters, and beaches would all reopen. And perhaps most importantly, tourism would be back.
This summer, this is going to be the summer of New York City.
The U.S. economy grew by a robust 6.4% in the first quarter, marking a strong start to the year as the country begins to recover from this pandemic. That was the second fastest GDP growth in the country since 2003. The jump was fueled by the government's massive stimulus drive and by the reopening of business activities as more Americans get inoculated. The U.S. government has provided nearly $6 trillion in COVID-19 relief over this past year. And President Joe Biden, well, he's not done yet. Yesterday, he unveiled a $1.8 trillion proposal called the American Families Plan, which aims to expand anti-poverty measures in the wake of this pandemic. Biden told his supporters in Georgia that this would be paid in part by raising taxes on the wealthy.
I'm not trying to punish anyone, but we've got to make corporations making $40 billion paying zero is just not right. Something's seriously wrong here. The middle class and working people of this country are already paying enough in taxes. It's time for the richest 1% of Americans and corporate America to start to do their part.
After taking one of the biggest hits during the pandemic, U.S. cruise operators may soon set sail once again. And the sister report tells us Royal Caribbean is aiming to restart operations this July.
Royal Caribbean said on Thursday it hopes to get cruise ships sailing again in U.S. waters in July after the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issued new measures to speed up approvals. Late on Wednesday, the CDC made public a letter to the cruise industry that said it was committed to allowing cruise ships to resume passenger operations in the U.S. by midsummer. It came after Alaska and Florida sued the CDC, a lawsuit that sought to overturn the year-long ban on cruise operations due to the health crisis. In the letter, the CDC said a ship can start open water sailing if it attests that 98% of its crew and 95% of passengers are fully vaccinated. However, for Royal Caribbean Chief Executive Officer Richard Fain, there are still many concerns that need to be resolved. In a call with analysts, he said while it could be possible to restart cruising by mid-July, the restart does not mean that they will immediately go into full operation. Unveiling earnings on Thursday, Royal Caribbean reported an adjusted loss of $1.1 billion for the first quarter ending March 31st. Despite the possibility that Royal cruise ships will set sail soon, shares of the company were down in midday trading Thursday.
American regulators are proposing to ban menthol cigarettes. While it's a long-awaited win for anti-smoking groups, it could mean huge losses for the tobacco industry. Here's the full story.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration on Thursday proposed a ban on menthol cigarettes and flavored cigars in the United States. A win for anti-tobacco and civil rights groups, but a move that could erase a huge chunk of sales for cigarette manufacturers. For decades, anti-smoking groups have sounded the alarm on menthol cigarettes, arguing they contribute to disproportionate health burdens on black communities and play a major role in luring young people into smoking. The FDA was forced to act by Thursday, a court-imposed deadline, to respond to a citizen's petition from 2013 seeking a ban on menthol cigarettes. The ban, however, is likely to take years to implement with looming legal challenges from the tobacco industry. Altria Group and Reynolds American, a unit of British American Tobacco, said they would evaluate the latest proposal, but stated that the published science on the matter does not support regulating or banning menthol cigarettes. Imperial's U.S. business, ITG Brands, said the announcement was disappointing but not unexpected. Menthol cigarettes, already banned in many U.S. states, including California and Massachusetts, still account for more than a third of the industry's overall market share, even as smoking rates have declined. Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids said Thursday the FDA's latest move could be the strongest action that the United States has ever taken to drive down the number of kids who start smoking.
Back here at home, a planned Labor Day protest in Metro Manila set to push through Saturday, despite the extension of the modified enhanced community quarantine. Workers group Kilusang Mayo Uno vows strict implementation of basic health protocols for the event, which is expected to be attended by hundreds of laborers. KMU chairperson Elmer Labog says this year's protest will zero in on people's demand for cash aid amid the pandemic. He points out some 12 million Filipino laborers have been affected by the health crisis.
Hindi naman kailangan nag-umusbong na parang kabuti yung mga tinatawag na community pantries sa iba't ibang dako ng ating bansa. Pero dapat maging pangunahing responsibilidad talaga ng gobyerno yung pagbibigay ayuda sa ating mga manggagawa't mahirap na mamamayan.
Technical difficulties mar the first day of the online registration for the country's national identification system. On Facebook, the Philippine Statistics Authority said its technical team is currently figuring out the source of the problem. It said it will post another update once the website is up and running again. According to the PSA, at least 28 million Filipinos have already registered for the national ID. Socioeconomic Planning Secretary Carl Chua earlier said the national ID system would help streamline the distribution of social aid as well as broaden access to financial services. Going to take another break. Up ahead, the Brooklyn Nets still in the driver's seat for the top seed in the NBA's Eastern Conference. We'll have the latest in sports after the break. You're on Dateline Philippines, here on ANC. We are back with some sports action. Former NBA MVP Kevin Durant was back in top form as he powered the Brooklyn Nets to an easy win against the Indiana Pacers. The Nets bagged a 130-113 road victory behind Durant's season high, 42 points. Durant made his eighth start since coming back from a hamstring injury. Brooklyn remains the number one team in the Eastern Conference with a 43-20 record. They're 1.5 games ahead of Philadelphia in the race for the number one seed in the East. No Luka Doncic, no problem for the Dallas Mavericks. Tim Hardaway Jr. went bananas for Dallas, scoring a career-high 42 points in the Mavericks' 115-105 win against the Detroit Pistons. Hardaway scored 17 points in a row for Dallas in the fourth quarter to guide them to victory. His production offset the absence of their MVP candidate Doncic, who was out with a bruised elbow. The Mavericks have won 5 of the last 6 games to move past Portland for 6th place in the Western Conference. And on to the lighter side of news, the ongoing health crisis continues to change working arrangements around the world, like I'm here broadcasting from home. While many are getting used to working from home, others prefer mixing business with pleasure. We have more in this report.
Is this Cliffside Office the ultimate in remote working? Jason Griffin is a call center consultant turned digital nomad. It's a term used to describe people who use technology to work from wherever there's connectivity. And the trend is becoming more popular as the ongoing health crisis continues to change our working habits.
Today we are pushing the technology to its limits because we're going over a cliff face. We're abseiling down to a ledge and I will be working all day from that ledge and taking and making calls, interacting with internal staff while I sit there in this ledge on the side of a cliff, just showing that remote literally means remote.
Griffin says as long as he has a mobile connection and his laptop, he can do his job as good as, if not better, than if he were in a busy office.
The new way of working is going to be completely different going forward. That's how I see it. The traditional 5 days in the office, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, they're gone. They're not here anymore. People are going to be split between home and office, if not home all the time. And it's exciting because it fits people's life so much better. Everything's going to be better.
But even if you're not planning on dangling off the side of a cliff over the Irish Sea, you may find yourself being wooed by the idea of packing up and setting up camp in, say, a Greek island. Communications consultant Rowena Harding likes to take a walk by the sea before work, then opens up her laptop in the sun and starts her day.
My favourite thing about being a digital nomad on a Greek island is that I can get to the sea so quickly. I can walk here in 10 minutes even if I don't know what I want to do. If I'm really stressed out from something, I just go, take the rubbish out. And the rubbish bins are just over there, and it means I get to walk to the sea, and it just lifts my soul so much.
Soon, her working setup may not be uncommon. A survey from US-based Enterprise Technology Research predicts the percentage of workers globally permanently working from home is expected to double in 2021. In Britain, more employers say working from home is increasing the productivity of their staff, according to a survey by the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development. Aid McCormack is a digital strategist and author of Beyond 9 to 5, your career guide for the digital age.
The untethered workforce would appear to be the way forward. The big problem that the major players have is that they believe that the best work can be done when the people are bundled together in the one office, so to speak. So there's going to be a little bit of a tension there. But again, as the war for talent becomes increasingly acute, it will be the talent that determines the conditions of work and not the employer. So I see that's going to be one of the major post-industrial era shifts.
And before we go, professional golfer Marcus Armitage and driver Paul O'Neill land in the record books for a one-of-a-kind hole-in-one. Check this out.
Money! Money! Money, Paul! It's money, Paul! Go! Go!
That is a world record!
Yeah, it's good enough! Get in there! Get in there! Oh, man! I'm buzzing! Where's the ball?
It's comfortably over. Just looking now, it's 300 yards.
Let's admit it, we all needed to see something like that. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe, keep here on ANC.